Planet Earth, an age of abundance. It's an era of entertainment in which mankind suffers from a loss of direction and a paralyzing plethora of leisure choices. Only the Vox Duo can navigate the deluge of delight that is the Golden Age.
Hello, I'm Adam.
And I'm Joe. We're here to ask each other one very simple question about Valerian.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I was, and I expected to be. Luc Besson is a director that never puts out a flawless film, but I'm always on the lookout for his name. He's the dumb action movies with heart guy, and has been since the early 90s. And his last foray into science fiction, The Fifth Element, was a great time. And so I was ready, and I was not aware of the previous history of the Valerian and Laureline comic or anything like that until the week before I saw it. All I knew was that was his name, and that it was a science fiction film, and that the few moments of the previews I saw looked really good before I shut my eyes, because I don't like spoilers. And that said, this is a film I've been recommending, not because it tells a particularly deep story. It's not that sort of film, but then what film by Luc Besson is, but because it's full of the creativity and gorgeous spectacle that we look for big budget science fiction films for. And it's also got at least one likable cast member.
I will say, I feel like I texted you after the movie was over that I wasn't sure what to think. And that's literally true. The movie has left me without strong feelings one way or another. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I suppose you could say I liked it. It was fine. It just didn't do anything to really hook me, grab me, pull me in, make me love it. And I'd originally heard about this back in March when Ars Technica wrote an article about it, pointing out its interesting backstory. Coming out of the, and I'm going to be scanning the article here while I'm talking, coming out of the original French comic Valerian et Laureline, which was published in 1967 originally.
Laureline, almost certainly, by the way. It's French, remember?
My French accent is and always has been absolutely atrocious. So we'll go with yes.
Valerian et Laureline. I'm sure that's not true. Come on, give me your best shot.
That was my best shot.
Say, please pass the wine and the cheese.
Merci beaucoup.
All right.
It's not just my accent that's atrocious. It's my grasp of vocabulary. Based off of this 1967 comic, which had fairly trippy visuals in comic book form, and was drawn on by a whole generation of people, including the creators of Star Wars. And so a lot of what you see in the original comic looks familiar, if only because everybody else has ripped it off since then.
Mm.
So when I first heard about the movie, I was interested in seeing it just to see how that kind of comic book heritage would translate to the big screen and what the visuals would end up looking like in Luc Besson's hands, especially given his past with The Fifth Element. And so from that aspect, I was not disappointed. It had gorgeous visuals. Everything about the film was visually very attractive. I think it was just the story. Like I say, I didn't hate it. It didn't give me anything to love about it either.
Now, before we get off the topic of Valerian and Laureline having this really big legacy, even though no one's heard of it, because my understanding is that LucasArts, or Lucasfilm rather, their graphic designers even had like copies at their desks, although no one's ever admitted it. You took the time to read some of the comics before even watching this movie, right?
I got through about the first 30 pages of the first story before I actually saw the movie. I had intended, you know, I'd grabbed the comic way back in March or April and had intended to read it and just never got around to it. But yeah, I've read a little bit of it before the movie.
A Million Miles Away?
The part I was reading seemed more traditional, not traditional comic bookish. It was definitely a space and time adventure, but not what I was necessarily expecting in terms of far-out Star Wars Guardians of the Galaxy-style artwork and visual.
Okay. Well, let me, since you've mentioned the visuals, let's start with that. Yeah, I was on the lookout after having seen that for stuff that looked familiar, and I thought the starships that you see surrounding the City of a Thousand Planets and whatnot definitely had a hint of, you know, the Star Wars universe and the rest to them. But what was refreshing about this film to me is that it felt like, first of all, it felt like Star Wars with the fetters torn off. At this point, I think the Star Wars universe has kind of ossified. You know, they, even with all the amazing digital technology they have now, they are stuck with a certain 1970s conception of science fiction, and as a result, when you get new movies set in the Star Wars universe, what you get are minor redesigns of stormtroopers and various other stock pieces. Whereas Trans taking Valerian and Loreline, Luc Besson felt free to run wild in the best traditions of science fiction and do some crazy stuff. And obviously, a lot of what we saw was not stuff that was actually in the comics. I'm fairly sure, anyway. I'd be willing to bet that the whole virtual reality market... By the way, spoilers this episode. And I know that one of the volumes is called The Empire of a Thousand Planets, whereas we have The City of a Thousand Planets, which is probably... which is a more interesting concept, I think. And I'll bet that's one of the things that Luc Besson liked the idea of that he put in as a director and writer. But in short, I thought that there was so much more on offer here than, you know, we've been receiving from its descendants lately. And that was refreshing.
Yeah, I will give you that. It seemed more visually fresh than the Star Wars movies do. One of the things that did impress me right off the bat was at the beginning of the movie when we first see the aliens on the planet Mule. I believe the aliens are called Pearls, interestingly enough. When we see the very first character and she's walking around, I noticed that she's humanoid, obviously, but her walk did not, to me, look humanoid. It looked different than how people walk. It looked alien. And that was immediately a thumbs up element that, yes, we've got aliens that, sure, they're humanoid, but it's very apparent that they're not us. We're using CGI to communicate. This is someone who visually resembles us in shape, but is not us. And I found that very refreshing.
Mm-hmm. I think the whole first 10 minutes of the movie really had me excited for a much better movie than we ultimately got, maybe. The prologue, in which we see the creation of the City of a Thousand Planets, was just such a feel-good progression and sequence. And following on from that, the aliens, as you said, were really interesting, and I felt charmed by them, even though they hadn't actually said anything. Maybe there was one too many joyous twirls there. But even though I saw coming there that something terrible was going to happen, I liked them. And again, I think this is Luc Besson's big... strength in the line of dumb action movies directors is that, like Stephen King, he is a person who will bother to try to make you care about someone before that he caps them. That was always what Stephen King did. You know, before the trucker suddenly got eaten by a monster or something, you'd learn about his wife and his children and his back aching. You know, there'd be several pages of him being built up as a legitimate character. And So it was with this. I think the sequence for other directors would have been shorter and less heartfelt. So I quite enjoyed that. And things go down, starting actually when we get introduced to the heroes. But the first 10 minutes of that film, I thought, were just a wonderful progression.
I loved it. I went into the movie, I'd seen the trailer, I knew it was trippy, I knew it was space, but at the same time, these are brand new characters. Nobody, almost nobody, has ever seen Valerian and Laureline before. And I was curious, how is the movie going to introduce them? How is the movie going to introduce us to this universe and get us into the film? Because if you just drop straight into the story, you're not going to feel any connection to anybody. And I was really worried that was going to be the case. And then when we get the opening notes to Major Tom, I was at first a little worried. Are we going to have inappropriate pop songs, which is something that movies occasionally do, and it's awkward. But the music fit perfectly because we're opening with real space videos from the 1970s of Russians and Americans meeting in space for the first time to the notes of Major Tom from that exact time period. It was visually, the music and the visuals matched and were perfect. And then when he just kept continuing that and continuing that and continuing that, rolling it forward through time as more and more modules get connected to this, what I assume started out as the International Space Station, and more modules get connected to it. Artificial gravity gets turned on for the first time. We get a montage of every nation on Earth coming and hooking up here. It's not just the Russians and the Americans. It's the Chinese. It's the Indians. It's an African nation. That was fantastic. And then aliens show up and we're just getting one series of aliens after another. That was such a great way to introduce us to this universe where we've got this city that has representatives from 1,000 planets in it. That was wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then I agree, dropping onto Mule and meeting the Pearls in what is essentially a dialogue-free scene, and any dialogue that there is in an alien language that we're not given subtitles for, and yet it's very clear what they're communicating to each other, and when we finally do need subtitles, they're there. But I was very impressed with that. I was surprised by how much I cared once the bad stuff started happening to a group of people that 10 minutes previously I hadn't even known existed. And then I agree, once we get to Valerian and Laureline, I thought it... I don't want to say it slowed down. I don't know. If I can be a little bit harsh and critical towards the leads, I didn't feel like they did a great job carrying the movie.
Before we get into that, because this is the last thing I want to say about that opening sequence, but even though I don't guess there is... Well, no, okay, that's not true. I think it started things off on a more optimistic foot than most of the movies we've seen lately. I mean, It's a level of goodwill toward the idea of the future that is primarily associated with Star Trek, I think. And even though... I'll say this. You know, even afterward, once we get into government skullduggery and all the rest, throughout the film, there are a lot of... The vast majority of, you know, the Terran Alliance or whatever they're called all seem to be pretty decent people that don't know what's going on. And that was refreshing to me. Even though, you know, you kind of got an idea of where things were headed pretty quickly. Overall, it seems like everyone was doing a pretty decent job of hanging together and making this plural society work.
Yeah, I'll give a praise and a dislike simultaneously, just because it's appropriate to throw this in. We got to the big conflict in the government skullduggery, and I was expecting that pretty much the entire government would be in on it, that it would be Valerian and Laureline running from pretty much everybody fighting against the universe. And I was very pleasantly surprised that, in fact, the commander was... not just ended up to his eyeballs, but was the originator of it all. And apparently some members of the council were in on it as well, it was hinted at, although I don't know that that was ever directly shown. But other than that, everybody else they worked with on a government level was on the side of right, wanting to help them do the right thing. They weren't, it wasn't a dull, trite story of fighting against everybody on your own side. That was very refreshing. Criticism is, it bugged me for three quarters of the movie that the commander outranked the general. That just feels entirely backward from anything I know of any military rank in any system I've ever heard of. Commanders don't outrank generals, and it drove me nuts. Maybe in the French army they do, I don't know, but it drove me nuts that we constantly had the commander giving orders to the general and the general deferring to the commander. Small thing, but I really wish that had been reversed.
Fair enough. It honestly slipped by me, which is surprising considering I have at least decent knowledge of how ranks work, but I had not thought of it. Okay, so then we're introduced to the cast members, and here I will lodge a formal complaint. I understand why Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets is a decent name, but throughout this movie, first of all, I blame the actor, but I think if you want, but I think that the writing had a fair amount to do with it as well. Valerian, I never really liked, whereas Laureline charmed me, and I kept thinking to myself, "Wow, she's a better character than the main character." And they both had essentially equal screen time. And only later did I learn that the original comic, or one of the titles of it, was Valerian and Laureline. Now, my wife and is justly ticked off that they just ripped off the name, the female half of the protagonists, and stuck in there the City of 1,000 Planets. I'm sorry, that just seems wrong to me. Valerian and Laureline, colon, the City of 1,000 Planets, or something, perhaps. But bad producers.
Yeah, I'm not generally known as a raging feminist, but I'm 100% with you right there. They were every bit a co-equal duo throughout the entire movie. There was never really any point at which the movie was about Valerian. The movie was about Valerian and Laureline. And I agree, her name should have been on the title. It was the title of the original comics. Valerian and Laureline, even if you just left it at that without any subtitle, I think would be fantastic. This is the story of Valerian and Laureline, and it's the first time we meet them. And if I have no idea if Luc Besson has any intentions of doing more than one movie.
I think he's written several. Someone said that, but I don't know if it's true.
I'm torn between, I don't know if I'm really hoping for that or not, but if he was, I feel just saying Valerian and Laureline would have been a great title for this movie, just to introduce this duo of characters, and then we could have subtitled other movies. But yeah, I agree. I didn't like the way the naming of the movie at least tried to shove her to the back when she was co-equal throughout everything else.
Yeah, well, the title, I think they both got their time in the sun. You know, essentially they rescue each other at various points. They each have a little solo adventure, which shows how much the movie is about them, even though it doesn't really do a good job of that. So yeah, Valerian, Laureline, and when we're introduced to them, as my wife said, there's this initial misleading scene. At first, you know, for a good solid minute, I think they're a couple and she's just mad at him. But then it turns out that they're not a couple, and Valerian wants her, but of course Laureline knows exactly what he's about and isn't willing to let him get off so easily, literally or figuratively.
I get the feeling these characters were supposed to have more chemistry between them than they actually did, and I think it's one of the flaws of the movie. I don't know if it's the directing or the two actors. I just never felt a true sense of chemistry between the two of them. They're saying the lines, they're doing the gestures, but it never felt real to me. And I don't know if that's just me not connecting with the two actors, or if you feel the same thing.
No. I have a question here in my notes. It's, was Valerian's unlikability intentional, the result of cultural differences, like, would French women swoon over this guy? Or is it a simple misfire? Because I didn't like him. I didn't think that he was You know, there's an established, you know, we'll use Valerian's offspring for this, Star Wars. You know, Harrison Ford's Han Solo has a similar dynamic with Princess Leia, in which she likes him, but she'll be damned if she's going to show it. And, you know, he's kidding her about it and kind of knows maybe, but, you know, and enjoys needling her about it. But we like Han Solo doing it. And I didn't like Valerian doing it. I just thought it came off as kind of a jerk.
Yeah, I'm inclined to think it was a misfire, unless it's cultural. And, I mean, that was one thing I noticed in the credits, was there was French names all over the credits. And so maybe this is a movie that emotionally plays better in France than it does in the U.S. And I'm willing to give it that benefit of the doubt. But otherwise, I'm going to say it was a misfire, because I agree. I felt like he was supposed to be a Han Solo roguish type character, and I never connected with him. I never liked him in that way. And Laura Lean, kind of the same thing. I felt like I should like her a lot more than I actually did. Both of the characters just left me meh, is the best characterization of what I felt watching the two of them on screen. And I never really got that sense of likability towards either of them, and I never really felt any attraction of them towards each other, even though I was clearly supposed to. And I think in that opening scene, you're supposed to get a little bit of she flirts with him. I think you're supposed to get that, but I didn't feel it, and so I'm not sure if that's just me expecting more conventional setup between the two characters and them not pulling it off, or if I'm expecting something that really wasn't there.
I suspect Cara Delevingne is actually a very good actress, and that she did the best with the material that she was given, because I did like her. I think she commits to everything. Like, when she's supposed to be indifferent to him, man, she is cold, and fabulously so. You know, it often seems like being cool and cold is the easiest sort of direction that an actor can get, but there's a real subtlety toward doing that well and just being boring. And I thought she pulled that off real well. And then when she's supposed to show emotion, she's got the tears going and, you know, real emotion in her face. And, you know, but the problem was that I didn't feel like that was in character when she finally did show that emotion. You know, people don't go from 0 to 60 like that. You know, she would show a version of being open that was true to her character. But suddenly being open-hearted and talking about love and all the rest, I didn't buy that. And so I by that time, I blamed Luc Besson himself for it. And in fact, it was a bit disappointing, because I bought the character, which is why when she finally begs Valerian to give back the pearl, and also when she finally gives herself to Valerian at the end, I found that very dissonant. You know, the version of the character I believed in until that point had her saying maybe, and then leaving his butt on the bridge or something. You know, or maybe he makes a move and she just punches him in the balls or something. You know, I liked that version of that character who he was succeeding with, but she is a seriously hard shell.
Yeah, I tend to agree. If we're going to stay true to her character, I felt like the more true version is she can see his attractive qualities, but she doesn't trust him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we're supposed to get at the scene where they're arguing over whether or not to give the converter back to the pearls, is she wants him to do the right thing, and she's surprised that he's so devoted to duty that he doesn't want to do the right thing. And honestly, I really like that as a part of his character. We get so many good guys who are like, eh, ignore the rules. Let's give the aliens whatever they think is rightfully theirs, because that's the moral thing to do. And I liked Valerian as a character that plays the rogue plays the devil may care attitude, but really does have a strong devotion to doing his job and upholding the law. And I thought her plea to let's give them the converter was perfectly in character. And honestly, I was a little disappointed when he agreed to. I know they built it up as he loves her, he wants her to love him, he wants to make the gesture. But if you're going to make him as a character who's determined to follow the law above all else, that felt like way too fast of a switch to be like, okay, screw it, let's give it back to him, because that'll make you like me. And conversely, I agree with you. I think she should have left him hanging on the bridge. Maybe a comment like, this is a good first step, but let's see some more out of you. Let's see that this isn't just a one-time manipulation thing, but this is real and ongoing. It felt too fast on her account to switch to, okay, let's do it.
I think that devotion to the job is something that could have been better flagged. I agree that that would have been good, but I disagree if you felt strongly that he believed that. I don't know, it came a little out of nowhere for me.
I'll agree with that.
And as far as, this is something that did annoy me, you caught the commander in general bit, but it always beggars belief for me when the rogues arrive and talk crap to their commander, and he doesn't just have them thrown in the prison immediately or something. You know, it's like, oh gosh, I better not worry about you, Sergeant. I need you more than you need me. I never buy that. It's not how people work.
Right, and there was a line that Laureline had when Valerian was off screen, something to the effect of, may not have been Laureline, might have been somebody else, but something to the effect of, he's one of your best agents, you need him, you can't afford not to have him. And so I think we're supposed to assume and go along with it without the movie really supporting it, that he's this kind of super valuable character and everybody makes allowances for him because he is so valuable at doing his job. But I think that was another thing that was said rather than shown.
Yeah, I mean, he half bumbles, half succeeds through his first mission. She comes off as far more competent because, of course, it's funnier when the girl does it. Yeah. As far as missteps with characterization go, he throws out a good idea and then missteps with it. I enjoyed Bubble. I was on board with Bubble, and then she dies, but she dies before I have a chance to really care. I mean, I like her by then. I'm enjoying her. She's part of the party. And maybe if she died toward the very end of the movie or something, I would have been unhappy with that. But as it was, I just thought to myself, really?
It's odd for a movie with such attention to care in the visuals, but honestly, it felt like Luc Besson was taking a little bit of the lazy, easy route in expecting us to understand how these kinds of movies work and who these kinds of characters are, and to form emotional resonances based on we know how this type of story goes, that Bubble, we get the barest sketch of she's been a slave since she was really young, and she's been trained to perform for all of these customers, and she's lived the life of a slave, and that's just barely sketched in for us, and then she dies, and we're supposed to feel sad about it, and yet I feel like I don't really feel sad. I don't feel like Luc Besson, I agree, didn't do enough to build her up into a character we really care about, but I feel like he's, in hinting at those details, he's trying to say, you know a ton of characters like her, just transfer that emotional engagement from those characters over to her and feel for her what you have felt for them in past stories.
Yeah, it's miming story moments rather than actually doing them and committing to them. You know, the funny thing is that I was enjoying her death scene until the very end, because I was convinced she was faking it. She was an actress. I thought that she was going for tears, and that eventually she was going to say, did you like my performance? And they were all going to be like, why did you do that? But instead she crumbles to dust, and I realized I was actually supposed to care about that.
I didn't feel that. I feel like her character was supposed to be too earnest, that would have come out of left field for her character to have done something like that, but I can see where you would have gone for that.
It's really frustrating because, you know, it's such a Luc Besson thing. It's so sloppy. He's such a great director, and his ideas are often really good. And he's but it's like he doesn't spend enough time on it. What was this death supposed to do? How does that change Valerian and Laureline? There's a point to doing the story moments. They're supposed to be hinges. They're supposed to be, waypoints in the progression of character arcs and whatnot. And I didn't understand why he did it, which is why it took me by surprise so much.
Well, she'd been talking to him about the need to be open and emotionally vulnerable with Laureline and to actually tell her and show her what he really thought and to stop hiding behind his bravado. And I think her death was supposed to commit and make Valerian really dedicated to, okay, I've got to be more true if I want to get Laureline. But if that was the reason for it, it feels somewhat cheap that her purpose was there to die just so Valerian would take his own emotions more seriously.
See, I don't mind that supporting characters die to further the arcs of the main characters, because that's what they're there for. There's a reason they're called supporting characters. They, you know, their work is in service to the greater plot, but I don't see that connection. Oh, well, Bubble died giving me relationship advice, so I had better follow it in her honor. It just doesn't work for me.
But he was crying in that scene, so I kind of feel like that's what we're supposed to get out of it. Either that or he's far more emotionally connected to people than he wants you to think. Something. But he'd only really been with her for, what, half an hour before she died?
Exactly.
I thought he seemed overly involved.
Exactly. You know, and even if there was a reason, the fact that we're both wondering what it was kind of shows you how badly the point was made. Yeah, and there really just wasn't in total much. Whatever was going on under the hood there didn't really come together. You know, there's certainly not a great wider theme. I think that there's gestures made toward a good message there in terms of reparations. You know, because the essential point of Clive Owen's character, whatever his name was, is that, yes, we did this terrible thing, had to at the time, but even if we didn't, the bill would be too high to pay, so we just kind of have to ignore it, which is essentially, you know, the position of many governments with native peoples in North and South America. Yeah, thoughts on that, or any grand themes or ideas I missed? Because I didn't think there was much there.
I think whatever phrase it was that you used earlier about miming the story, that really sums up well how I walked out of the theater feeling. I felt like I should have liked the movie a lot more than I actually did. And I feel like, call it sloppiness, call it laziness, call it too much attention in one area and not enough in another, none of the characters emotionally connected with me, so I walked out thinking that was a movie that looked fantastic and had a decent story, and yet I don't feel anything about it because I didn't connect with anyone in the course of the entire movie. And also, the other thing that stuck out to me, Luc Besson has a very distinct visual style, or at least between this movie and Fifth Element he did. Mm-hmm. I spent most of the first half of the movie thinking, my word, this reminds me a lot of the Fifth Element. This is like watching the Fifth Element with different characters, not because it was literally the same, but because there was a lot of stylistic similarities. I was especially struck by the buses, the tour buses that they were riding up to the big market in, and that whole scene of super advanced and super primitive all mixed and stirred together. That felt very, very much like Fifth Element did. And I was left thinking, this looks really good, this looks really cool, and the whole you're wandering around and you're half in one dimension, half in another, was awesome and brilliant, but I kept being distracted by hey, this is the fifth element in space.
Yeah, all right. I don't know. I thought the movie's feels were different enough, probably owing in large part to how different technology was in 1995 or 97 or whatever it was than today. Point made. Well, my last note here is a quick shout, as a quick acknowledgement about representation, which is not a heavy theme for me, but I just wanted to note that the rise of China and its open market for Hollywood films has really done more for Asian Americans than any other push for diversity in film casting, to get into Chinese markets, you need to satisfy Chinese requirements. And one of them is usually that there's a recognizably Chinese character with a fair number of lines in there. So I pegged Chris Wu, who's actually also a former K-pop star, but he's a Chinese-Canadian guy. And as the sop to China, he's running around helping out the good general throughout the story. And he does a fine job. The character doesn't have an arc or anything. But anyway, I just find myself looking for them now with the big tentpole picture productions. I'm like, okay, where's the Chinese person? There he is.
I don't know if you pay attention to the opening, I don't know what you call them, credits, not title cards, but the, you know, the production companies that are involved with the film, and they each have their own logo. And I generally pay a little bit of attention to those, and I was immediately struck as soon as the film started rolling, with, I think it was Fundamental Productions was the company, with a logo like a jade, lion, Foo Dog, with Chinese characters underneath the name Fundamental, that it very much looked, I'm going to assume that's a Chinese production company that was involved in the creation of the movie, and that immediately stuck out, and I thought same thing you did. Yes, you've definitely got to make sure you're pulling in your nods and your involvement to get appropriate release in the Chinese market.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, there you go then. I've exhausted my notes, but I think we're essentially in agreement on all the movie points. It certainly didn't capture me emotionally, but I was glad I'd seen it.
Right. I was glad I went as well. But at the same time, I walked out of the theater thinking, you know, if I only see two movies completely solo in a year, maybe I should have gone to see Baby Driver as my solo movie for the month of July.
You know, I, without getting into it, Baby Driver rather has, I would review that rather similarly, which is to say that I was never emotionally engaged, although my wife was, so your mileage may have varied, but that stylistically it was a fantastic experience and a far smoother one than this film, and that everyone was in character throughout. Edgar Wright can't make a bad movie, he's forgotten how.
If you liked the show, help new listeners find it by listening to The Golden Age and rating it in Apple Podcasts. Just go into Apple Podcasts, subscribe to The Golden Age, and rate it. You can also see announcements for new shows, episodes, and upcoming live streams by following @FromVoxDuo on Twitter. Joe blogs at MinorThoughts.com and is on Twitter @JMartinDF. Adam is on Twitter as well, @AdamVolley. That's Adam, V-O-L-L-E.